Echo and Harper Audio present Their Heads Are Green and Their Hands Are Blue by Paul Bowles. Read by Raphael Corkill, Mike Ortego, and Tom Zahner.
Far and few are the lands where the Jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve. From The Jumblies by Edward Lear.
The High Price of Solitude. Introduction to Their Heads Are Green and Their Hands Are Blue. Edmund White. Paul Bowles first visited Morocco in 1931 at Gertrude Stein's suggestion. He was just 20, an American in Paris, and having a hard time deciding whether he was a poet, a composer, or perhaps even a short story writer. He was also easily distracted, and, according to his friend, the soon-to-be eminent composer Aaron Copland, somewhat lazy. Both young men were studying musical composition in Paris. As Copland pointed out to Bowles, if you don't work now when you're 20, nobody will love you when you're 30. Stein told Bowles to go to Tangier. She said, ruling out two French seaside resorts, you don't want to go to Villefranche. Everybody's there. And Saint-Jean-de-Luz is empty and with an awful climate. The place you should go is Tangier. When Bowles accepted her advice and set off for the Moroccan port with Aaron Copland, he had no idea that Tangier would prove to be much more than a rest, a lark, a one-summer stand. Eventually, it would turn out to be the city where he would spend most of his adult life, and Moroccan culture would provide him with the material and inspiration that his admirers associate with his name. During that first summer in Tangier, Copland was distracted by the constant, menacing beat of distant drums, the dirt and flies, the lack of civilization and of other civilized people, with the exception of a Danish painter, Christian Tunney, and his American girlfriend. But Bowles took to the place, which he described in his 1972 memoir, Without Stopping, as a dream city. He wrote, its topography was rich in prototypical dream scenes, covered streets like corridors with doors opening into rooms on each side, hidden terraces high above the sea, streets consisting only of steps, dark impasses, small squares built on sloping terrain so that they looked like ballet sets designed in false perspective, with alleys leading off in several directions, as well as the classical dream equipment of tunnels, ramparts, ruins, dungeons, and cliffs. The dreamlike dissolves of Tangier, its lively mix of cultures, its anomalous and wide-open status at that time as an international free port, its schizophrenic layout as a new European city above the ancient Moroccan city below, the ready availability of drugs and boys, its flirtatious Arab and Berber populations, so unlike the more dour Muslims of the Middle East, the country's position then as a French possession, and the universal use of the French language, all these elements made Tangier at once exotic and accessible, bewildering and familiar, frightening and delightful. Over the years, Tangier's reputation as an affordable sin city would attract writers as diverse as Joe Orton, Tennessee Williams, William Burroughs, and Jean Genet. All of them came for the boys, and a few for the drugs. Fewer still for the culture. Bowles had a few affairs with women, and married the talented writer Jane Auer, herself a lesbian. His physical puritanism was coherent with the almost dandified distance he maintained from other people. This very remoteness, paradoxically, made a traditional society strangely attractive to him, one in which few people prized privacy, and conformism was more esteemed than individuality. Perhaps as an American,
sample complete. Ready to continue?